Radio.
This is Channel 2.
No, it's still Channel 2. Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on Channel Radio. In association with Biz Radio. Sorry, I'm still swallowing half a poppadom.
Oh, like an ostrich. I have to say that I'm having the courgette, the chutney with courgettes in, and it is absolutely lovely. I'm telling you, folks, if you buy just an any old chutney from the supermarket, you are missing out, because this is, you can actually see the vegetables in it, can't you, Mark?
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Taste is great.
Absolutely incredible. So I haven't had the aubergine in one yet, and aubergines are my one weakness.
You could lick my mouse mat. I just spilt the aubergine all over my mouse mat.
I won't, thank you very much. Thanks for the offer. Amazing taste. Where were we? I was swigging my beer. It's got, so you're going to tell me about this. It's got a very different taste. So it's not too sweet. And it's got, to me, it's got a spice to it.
Yeah.
You can't tell us the secret ingredient.
I love to say, Paul, shall we say 100 million pounds to begin with? When it is.
Yeah, well, I think so. Oh, I think that's reasonable.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
I know you. Lloyds aren't giving me any cash at the moment.
Forget Lloyds. Yeah. I'll find some other Swift account or somewhere we can sort
Bitcoin.
Bitcoin. No, not that. Real coin. The secret, again, is a very, very big question what you're asking. And the spices I can reveal, that chilies, of course, which will give you a kick. But other than that, for aromatic taste and flavor is the cardamoms and the fennel. Again, I would say that in a very right proportion, that is what the magic combination will make it. Otherwise, spices, they can go high or low, they can really bitter it. Mm-hmm. And so that is the main, and my dream was also to create something like spicy beer, aromatic and spicy. So here in UK we were saying that Kent's first aromatic and spicy pale ale, but in Belgium all I have said is aromatic spice beer, because the word beer or pale ale, it's more like confusing sometimes, you know, but people, they love it.
Mark, are you hogging the beer, or is there any left?
Right, well,
because
pounds.
Wayne's listening, and
100
he's
million. That's what Paul said.
What was that? Sorry,
100 million.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, I need to taste it again just to know. But Wayne Cunnington's listening, and as a health and safety officer, he says it's necessary for us as we're eating, which is a great risk on air of choking. Mm. It's necessary to have the drink as well. Yeah, he's given us permission.
I'm going to read a couple of tweets, because we're well behind here, yes, as normal.
Yeah.
And then we're going to talk to Mark Telford of Telford Accountants.
Yeah.
What's on in Kent? Yes, please, can we have a Business Bunker shout out? Lots going on in Kent this week, especially with the August bank holiday. Let's hope the weather's good. Download our app to see everything that's going on exclusively in this county. It's a great show, guys, and they say Business Bunker. So I have the What's on in Kent app. I have to tell you, it's a really, really good app. There's loads and loads of information on there. Do download it. It's a free download on the Play Store or on the Apple Store. What's on in Kent? Give them a follow on Twitter as well, but download the app. Paragon Drones, accountants, food, beer, all wrapped up in banter and tunes. It must be the Business Bunker Show. We'd love a mention, please. Paragon Drones.
And the Michael Park Surveyors are saying, thanks to you lot on Bee Bunker, using the Bee Bunker hashtag, I'm off to find some food.
Yeah, you won't find anything like what you've got, Steph. Exactly. We've got the real deal here. I think I'll catch up with some of those in a minute. I need to read you this as well, and then we're going to talk to Mark. Be part of Maidstone's first research and development event. Maidstone Innovation Centre is holding its first ever R&D event on Wednesday the 9th of November, and is asking for ideas and topics to make sure it will be a benefit to all the attendees. Interested businesses are being asked to complete a short survey about topics that interest them and their organisation, and the information will be used to inform the agenda and sessions for the innovative event. Working in collaboration with Canterbury Christchurch University and partners Business Eagle Labs, Innovate UK Edge, SEHTA and NCL Technology Ventures, the event will act as a catalyst to incentivise new collaboration opportunities and sharing of information between companies and academics. Get involved in a fascinating event by taking part in a short survey which takes less than 10 minutes to complete by going to letstalkmaidstone.uk.engagementhq.com. That's letstalkmaidstone.uk.engagementhq.com. The survey, I can't speak.
It's because you've got poppadom between
your teeth. Yeah. Mm. And aubergine dip.
I just need to know when you're going to expect me to read something so I can have a mouthful in between.
I'm waiting for you to take a big bite and then I'm going to go, and Jules, have you got anything?
Which I knew.
Anyway, to finish this off, the survey closes on the 4th of September, so you've only got a week before you can fill that in.
Okay. So also we have, I saw as I was driving in, there's a chili festival actually. I was coming sort of near Chalock or around there. There was a chili festival happening. And also we have Chamber Business Partners Warners Solicitors hosting Ruth's The Lost Garden of Sevenoaks. They're there, I think. And they'll be leading a full-service law firm, and they're going to be offering specialist legal advice on a range of matters to individuals, families and businesses in and around the southeast of England. There'll be a light brunch, a grazing table. I'd go just for that. And for those who are interested, at the end of the meeting, an alpaca pack a trek, a mindful walking session.
I wonder what you're going to say there.
I love this mindful word. You know, it's a bit like plant based. You know, everything now is plant based. I opened some crackers the other day and they were plant based. Mm. Weren't they always plant based?
I have a question about that.
And my cleaning stuff is all
hold on. I have a question about all this plant based nonsense. Yeah. For the last few years, they keep telling us not to eat processed food.
Yeah.
How do you make plant-based meat if it ain't processed?
Oh, well, it's awful. In South Africa, they've taken all these fake meats off the shelves.
Right.
But, you know, our friend Mr. Bill Gates, Gates is, as we know, buying up soy farms in America and wants all the lowly people to eat soy.
Yep.
I won't be.
And bugs, but we've eaten bugs.
We have. But then, you know, you'd rather have a nice steak, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Grass-fed.
Yep.
Anyway, Warner Solicitors. How do we get on to that from Warner Solicitors? Oh, light brunch grazing. Anyway, Claire Price, who's the owner of Ruth's, which is the Lost Gardens of Babylon, Sevenoaks, will mention, she'll be talking about corporate packages which are available at the gardens and also an importance of environmental therapy for the physical and mental well-being of all employees. You can, if you're a member, you can attend for free and guests are welcome for a £10 entrance fee. So when is this, I hear you cry? It's the 7th of September. It's 10:30 till 12 p.m. And the Lost Gardens of Sevenoaks are in Sevenoaks.
No, not that lost then.
Kent, and the little sat nav, if you're going, is T for Tiger, N for Norman, 15. Oh, I think that is. I haven't got my glasses on. H for Harry and B for Bertram.
It'll be zero, won't it?
Yeah. Oh, is zero. Oh, no, yeah, it'll be zero. That's right. Thank you for that. And there is a little website, which is www.sevenoakschamber.com with /event/ First Wednesday Networking September. So that is on the 7th of September. That sounds great. I'm not sure about the mindful walking. I think I always walk mindfully because you could very easily go down a pothole, couldn't you, in Kent? Mm.
Talking about that, I'm desperate to come to Mark, but you keep distracting me.
But you're too busy eating popcorn.
And I keep eating stuff, which I shouldn't do.
Yeah. Where's your birthday?
Simon Pollard has been on to me 3 or 4 times about us joining him on one of his walks to do an outside broadcast.
I'd love to.
Right, good, because we've got some dates for that, but I think it's when you're away.
Oh, don't do it when I'm away. Do it when I'm
not.
Back.
You're doing it. I'm not.
I've got a little rucksack. Yeah, I'll do it. I've got a rucksack. I've got a shiwi. I've got all that for outdoor, you know,
great
things.
We needed to know that. You've put me off my poppadom now.
You've got my holiday dates. Work around it. Paul, I wanted to ask you another thing. Poppadom, I was writing about it.
Yeah.
And in India, it's papadom, isn't it? It's not a poppadom. That's English speech.
Actually, the word is called papad. And the word "de" is sometimes very difficult to pronounce and to speak that word. And "de", dal, da, da, ba. Some they say ra or something. But yeah, we don't call popperdoms, what is famously known here. And just because it's been
anglicized
as like even
so many things, yeah,
even
yeah.
Like my name is anglicized, yeah, I'm not actual Paul, you
no,
know,
no.
You know.
Come on, tell us what your real name is.
You really want to know?
Yes.
I'll speak on air. My full name is Agyapal Singh Babra.
Ah.
Now the word Agyapal, my dad chose
Agyapal.
Now the word Pal, P-A-L, when I was being a civil servant, from Pal became Paul. But some, they still call me Agyapal.
Agyapal is nice.
Now, the word Agyapal means to obey, which I normally, you know that.
You only obey Rani, I think.
Of course, how can I ignore you, darling? But that's the word. It's a lot of things has been anglicized, and also the curry, tikka masala,
yeah.
Just put in some tomatoes and cream and some spices, and the famous Indian dish called tikka masala is famously number one dish in here in UK.
It's like Chinese chop suey, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah. Which was an Americanization, and chop suey just means chuck it all in.
Yeah.
Cool. Listen, we need to talk to Mark now. Mark Telford, absolute pleasure to have you back on the show. Thank you so much for joining us. Mark is the owner, CEO, head honcho.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, chief man, bottle washer, Telford's accountants. Mark, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Paul. Good to see you again, Jules. And good,
yes.
Great to meet you, Paul.
Likewise.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things we can talk about in terms of what's going on in the business world, and there's a number of things I want to touch on with you. We don't need to discuss Jules's expense claims for having her hair done. Although, having said that, it is an issue, isn't it, in terms of what can be claimed expense-wise and what can't. And there's also some confusion about what actually claiming expenses mean. And I'll give you what I mean by that. Every month, I claim expenses from my company for entertainment and things I've done, you know, so I go out, because I don't have a company credit card, things, you know, just even things like staples and paper and stuff like that, I buy for the company, I pay on my own credit card,
yeah.
And I claim it back.
Why don't you have a company credit card?
I don't even know what a bank account is. I just don't. I never have had, and nobody, no one in my organisation in that company has a, we just don't possess a company credit card, we don't even possess a debit card, yeah. Anyway, that's another issue. But I do a lot of entertainment because I do a lot of sales and customers,
yeah.
Now I claim that money back from my company, but they can't claim it as a business expense.
Who's they? You mean your people?
The company
Oh, your company.
Yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah. And this is an area that people often get confused,
yeah.
On Paul, this idea of entertaining costs, because the business can include it as a cost, but they don't get tax relief on that cost. So that's the key distinction. And what I'll often have a conversation with somebody and say, well, if it's not tax deductible, why don't I just pay for it personally? And I say, well, you're wasting your own money there, because what happens, you can use your business to pay for it. The alternative is, you get the business to pay yourself, you pay tax on your money, and then you're paying that cost out.
Mm.
So the big difference is the tax that you would incur on your personal income. So in very simple terms, it might be compared to, you know, if an entertaining bill is £100, that's £100 cost that is paid by the company. But if it's £100 that you're paying out, you're probably going to have to earn close to £140 to pay that £100. So you saved yourself £40 tax.
Yeah.
So that's the simple,
yeah,
explanation. And there's lots of other areas. But an interesting one, and we'll come on to Jules's example, where she had her hairdo, it's this concept of what's called wholly and exclusively for business purposes. Now, if Jules was in the habit of just having her hair done every week, I'd say, well, that's not business related. You can't put that through the business. If you've got to prepare for an event, a function that is specifically for work to raise your profile because you're in media-related work, then that cost is allowable. Because without that appearance on GB, you wouldn't have had your hair done specifically
exactly
for that.
And the next day I was swimming, so I only had the hair for that.
I'll tell you what you need to do.
What?
You need to have different hair for each activity. That's what you need.
Different hair?
Yeah, you need business hair.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you put that to one side when you're not doing business. So yeah. When you're home or you're doing personal stuff, you put your personal hair on.
Yeah. I think that's what I do, actually. Right. Like, usually my windswept beach swimming hair is my normal look. And when I was on GB, you said, "Cool, you brushed up all right, didn't you?" And it's just because
you changed hair.
I had my business hair on.
Yeah, exactly.
My media.
There's some interesting areas at the moment, Paul, about, because we're all acutely aware of inflation hitting 10%.
Yeah.
The general increase in the cost of living, fuel prices being a big one. Mm. So a big focus that we have on at the moment is how can businesses and clients in general be as tax efficient as possible?
Mm.
And there's lots of little incentives and allowances that people are missing out on. You've mentioned entertaining there. A big one that a lot of people aren't aware of is this concept of what's called trivial benefits. Now, trivial benefits for anybody that's running a business, it is if you can provide a benefit to yourself, your fellow directors, your employees, provided it has a value of £50 or less, it is not in cash, that can be given to your team, employees, tax-free. So a common example would be a £50 gift voucher.
Right.
Now, that can't be performance-related, so it can't be like, oh, we've won a new client, here's an extra 50 quid for doing that.
Right.
It has to be discretionary, it's non-performance-related. It could simply be, you come into office one day in a good mood, and you say, well, you know what, I'm in a good mood, here's a £50 gift voucher for everybody. Now, that is a nice touch for employers in the situation where they might not be able to give their team a pay rise.
Mm.
But their employees will appreciate very much the idea, you know what, we've got this gift voucher.
Okay. Here's a question, though. How many of those can you give in what period of time? You know, because I'm sure somebody could come in and go, it's 50 quid. I can't remember. It's 50 quid again. Yeah. So what are the rules and the guidelines around that?
Okay, and it's a very valid point. So if it's your own business, you're a director, and say your spouse is a director, you're limited to £300 a year.
Right.
For your employees, there is no set limit.
Right, okay.
But of course, it's got to be reasonable.
Hmm.
If you went completely over the top and you were paying thousands of pounds every month, I think the HMRC
can spot it
on it quite quickly.
Yeah.
But it's a nice touch, especially where we've spoken about home working.
Hmm.
Mental health has been a big issue. Costs are increasing. How can we help everybody out?
Yeah.
Show ourselves as a good employer.
Mm.
Here's a gift voucher. Here's a bunch of flowers for you. For your wife.
I don't know if this counts. I hope it does because I've done it. but every now and again, as a thank you to one of the staff, I'll go, you know, take yourself out for a meal, spend 50 quid.
Yep.
So, you know, those kind of things, just as saying thank you for something that they've done or whatever.
That's exactly it. Just as a good employer, you know, it just can't be performance related. Provided it's not performance related, it's not in cash or not cash equivalent, it's fine.
It's interesting that, though. What's the thinking behind it not being performance related? So you can't tie it into a way of earning it, if you see what I guess.
That's the idea. Disguised remuneration would be the correct term. If we go back years, a big thing, and it is sometimes a thing for bigger businesses where they spend more on this type of thing for employees. There's something called a PAYE settlement agreement, where the company adds all the cost up every year, and to avoid the team or the individuals paying tax on it, the company declares it to HMRC and pays some additional national insurance on it. That was becoming too onerous, so they decided to set this limit of £50. Anything under 50 quid, you don't need to bother reporting to us.
Right.
There's no set limit on it. It has to be reasonable.
Right. This is just a general question. I don't expect you to answer this specifically in my case. Unusually for a company director and someone that owns a number of companies, my personal tax position is incredibly simple. I don't even have an ISA. That's how simple my tax position is. In the last month, I've had four different tax codes sent by HMRC.
Yeah.
And I have two issues with this. They send you these things, and then I look, you know, I go onto my government gateway.
Yeah.
And I look at it, and I, you know, I'm not an accountant, I'm not a tax specialist, and I go, I have no idea what any of this means. They've listed all this stuff with numbers on it. Yeah. I don't know what the numbers are, what they're for, or where they got them from. And they've changed my tax code, and it's always detrimental change, yes. Yeah? Like, so this month, I've lost £400, I've had £400 less in my pay because of some arbitrary thing HMRC have done. And it just, I get really confused about how bad, or it seems to me, how badly they identify anything. Because it seems to me, if you're going to change something, why can't you just identify what you've changed? Yeah, you know, can you put a ring around it and go, look, you've had 1,500 quid from this, or you've had a benefit in kind of that, and that's why we've added it to it. But I got a tax, a new tax code 2 weeks ago, and it said, we've changed this tax code because you now owe us £3,800 of unpaid tax. Where from? Where from? So, have you got any views on that? Have you seen much activity with HMRC with this? Are they going over the books and redoing everything, or what's going on?
Yes, it's a very common issue, Paul. Tax codes being reissued to people, and they just can't make head nor tail of them.
Mm.
Some common areas for people to think about, and really within the mind, you want your tax code to be correct, because whether it's too high or too low. If it's too low, HMRC will catch up with you
eventually,
at some point.
Yeah.
So some common things will be, if you've changed jobs, quite often the transition between an old and a new employer, the tax code can become wrong.
Mm.
If you just recently submitted a tax return, and let's say your income was particularly high or particularly low in that year, HMRC automatically assume, this is especially for the self-employed or company directors, they automatically assume you'll be earning the same level of income in the following year.
Yeah.
So you might have a one-off item that goes through. They'll assume the same thing's going to be happen next year unless you tell them.
Mm.
But of course, most people don't realise that they have to tell them. Another thing where people get caught out is if they have a company car. You need to declare that to HMRC as soon as possible, otherwise you will end up with a big tax bill.
Mm.
Now, some reasons why people's tax coding notices may have come through with a change on recently, although you may be thinking, I haven't changed anything. One could be you submitted a tax return early. Another could be because there was an increase in the national insurance threshold in declared in the March spring statement by the Chancellor, which came into effect in July. So that will affect people. There could be other things such as if you do have a company car, the rate at which you pay tax on that car changes because we're in the new tax year now.
Yep.
And new notices tend to come out this time of year.
Mm.
But the overriding thing is if you get one of those brown envelopes from HMRC, it's got your tax code in it, do look at it. If you're not sure, either if you've got an accountant, speak to your accountant, or get in touch with HMRC and ask them to explain what they've changed and why they've changed it. Just as an example, a number of years ago, I was briefly with one company. I didn't actually get paid anything because I left very, very quickly. But they still reappeared on my tax code notice every single year as a source of employment,
uh-huh.
even though I'd never...
You couldn't get rid of them. You couldn't get them off.
I couldn't get rid of them. So if this applies to you the same way as it applies to Paul, you're not alone. Don't just leave it. Speak to somebody who can help you.
Yeah. I was smiling when you were saying that because I lodged a query with HMRC 6 weeks ago, and they haven't even acknowledged that I've lodged the query yet, let alone answered the query. And since then, I've had three new tax codes that have all got progressively worse.
Oh, and Mark was making them sound really touchy-feely and like they'd get straight onto you.
Yeah.
No, they
do you think
they
it's
won't,
changed since
they
pandemic?
Won't get onto you.
Working from home things.
Yes, certainly. I think generally, I mean, I speak to a lot of accountants, and generally the level of service has gone down.
Mm.
It's a lot harder to speak to somebody, get a sensible reply, and yeah, we know they're in a difficult situation and circumstances. But the other thing is, The way they work is very old-fashioned. Paul, you touched on technology earlier.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be up to date with everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, they're still very wary about sending anything by email. Okay, yeah. We understand that. But email is a common form of communication.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you can send emails in some encrypted yes. way, can't you?
And also, yeah, our mail system is atrocious these days.
Mm. Oh, good. Aren't they about to go on strike, the Royal Mail?
Yeah, no, but just as an example, my youngest son, it was his birthday a couple of months back, both myself, his mother and his brother all sent birthday cards to him. Not one of them arrived.
Really?
Not one of them arrived.
No.
You know, so this is a problem. You know, if somebody writes to you and says, I need you to do this, there's no audit trail that says you received that.
Yeah.
Whereas with an email, you yes. go, not only did you get that, you opened it, so I know you read it, so now just cough up or whatever. No, you're absolutely right, Mark. You know, they need to... They've tried, haven't they, with a gateway system so that you can at least log on and have a look at something. Although, I have to say, it's a pretty terrible piece of programming that they've got there. They ask you to fill in fixed... This thing, this drives me nuts as a technology person.
Does it?
Is when they ask you to fill in fields, you know, so for instance, you've got a 12-digit or wherever it is, national insurance number, yeah?
Mm.
They know that. They know how many digits it is, yeah? Why make the field an open field?
Yeah.
Why not make it 12 digits? So you've got to put 12 digits
in.
Because what you do is you put it in there and it goes wrong and it highlights it in red. You go, you read the number. And it takes you four goes before you realise you put a space in there somewhere that you can't see.
Yeah.
And that is just such
simple
poor,
stuff, isn't
that,
it?
But that is really poor systems design. It is really poor systems design.
I know you said there was no price cap on energy for businesses' prices. What do you think, Mark, about this winter? How's it going to impact some of our lovely small, medium enterprises with costs going up so much, not just for electric and gas, but also, of course, petrol? And then everything has gone up.
Yes, I mean, it's very interesting. It's basically, if you're caught in the middle, so you're a small business, you are going to get squeezed at both ends. So I've spoken to a lot of businesses recently. Some of them are saying things okay at the moment are fine, but they're saying we know we're going to get squeezed in the future, particularly if our clients who we're serving, they're selling to the customer, to the general public, because those people are going to be watching their money more carefully. So as a natural consequence, those business owners are going to be thinking, I need to watch my costs. So, Mr. Supplier, I'm going to you and I'm going to squeeze you on price, even though I know your cost of materials is going up, your fuel costs, your heating costs, shortage of labour, which is driving labour costs up.
Yeah.
So, a lot of small businesses are going to get squeezed, and I'd say it's really important for them now to be really focused on understanding their numbers.
I mean, this is where...
Or getting your accountant to understand the numbers, in my case, and explain it all.
But this is where...
Because I hate numbers.
This is where you get economic Armageddon, because it becomes an arms race, yeah? All of my expenses go up, so my instinct is to put my prices up.
Yeah.
But what putting your prices up does is drive your customers away, because they're all suffering anyway already, and then putting the prices up on top gives them an incentive to go, do you know what, I'm just not going to do that anymore.
Well,
yeah, I can't afford it.
I was talking to some of the shops in Whitstable High Street a couple of months ago, and they said footfall is, you know, it's busy, but nobody's buying. They're, you know, going in, but they're not really buying. And that's a big problem.
Energy worries me with my business, Fruitworks, because we don't consume a lot of energy, but the energy companies are pretty appalling in a shared building. I actually forked out money for a new gas boiler and insisted on having a meter put in, because I was getting bills that were just outrageously stupid.
Yeah.
What kind of meter? Like a smart
meter.
One? Or
No, I'm not having a smart meter. Yeah, you're joking.
Good.
No, just a gas meter. So that every month we read the meter and go, that's what we use. They sent me a bill for $30,000, yeah, when we estimated we'd used £400 worth of gas.
Mm.
And they tried to, you know, they wanted to take us to court and all kinds of things. We go, show us some numbers. Show us some numbers. And they gave us a meter reading of a meter that's not even in our building. And you go, it's not going to work. But anyway, I wanted to move past that, because that is going to be a problem for a lot of businesses. And I've heard already a number of hospitality businesses going. They're looking at energy bills of £160,000 to £200,000 a year, which will just finish their business.
It's
completely
not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. But as a general principle, one of the things that I think HMRC, I'm having a go at HMRC, so I'll get my own back for all these bloody tax codes they keep sending. They haven't put the price per mile up for a long time. It's still 42p or whatever it is per mile that you can claim for petrol expenses, whereas of course we've been paying £2 a gallon for petrol.
Yeah, there's a petition out there.
Is there?
On this?
Yeah.
I'm sure if you Google HMRC fuel rates petition, you will find it.
But
off the top of my head, I think it's 2009 since they last increased the rate per mile. And for those of you out there, it's 45p a mile for the first 10,000 miles, 25 pence a mile thereafter. If you just get reimbursed the cost of fuel rather than the vehicle as well, because you're using a company vehicle, there's fuel rates for just the fuel only. They're much lower, but again, they haven't really moved a great deal recently.
I'll tell you what interests me as well, and I think I'm right in this, but you can put me right. Even if you've got an electric car, you can still charge 42p a mile.
You can still charge the 45p a mile.
45.
Again, the rationale here is you're being reimbursed for the running cost of that vehicle.
Right.
So that includes maintenance, service, the actual cost of the vehicle as well.
Right.
So in a way, you know, electric cars are more expensive.
Right.
Plus that battery you've got in it, how long is it actually going to last?
Yeah, about 6 minutes. Yeah.
Well, I was into the rechargeable ones that I was talking about. I think Honda do an electric car that recharges as you drive, which is, I think, the only one I would think of getting.
Yeah, but
you've
not
got a face that looks like you don't agree.
Yeah, well because...
He screws up his nose, Paul Babber. I know very well when he doesn't
agree. Because all those cars that do it under braking or do it are hybrids. They're not electric vehicles.
What do you mean under braking?
When you brake, that's when it charges.
Really?
Yeah.
Sounds a bit dangerous, doesn't it?
you could sell your extra electricity you're generating every footed on the brake.
Yeah.
No, but they're hybrid cars, so they're not fully electric cars anyway. So there's no fully electric cars that's self-charging. I mean, there's a lot happening in the vehicle marketplace, but from the purpose that we're talking about today, you know, I think HMRC, especially with the cost of living crisis the way it is, energy the way it is, I mean, is there a process that HMRC go through? Is it do they reevaluate these things on a regular basis, or just when some politician says, "Oi, you need to think about this"?
Yeah, last time I was on, Paul, we spoke about Bitcoin and crypto.
Yep.
So what HMRC did earlier this year, they got a strategy group together, a think tank.
Right.
So that's where they're calling people from different areas of the business community to actually come together and say, what should our strategy be on this?
Yeah.
That's what they need to do now when it comes to things such as, you know, the cost of fuel, what rate should we be using?
Yeah.
Quite often they will lobby the main accounting and finance bodies, so like the ICAW, the ACCA, get feedback from them, and then they'll make a decision.
Right.
So it really needs that sort of momentum to build up. So that petition I mentioned earlier, do have a look for it. Do get on there and sign it, because then that's a bit of weight behind this. Mm. Look, you need to look at this.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. I want to move on. Had a few digs at HMRC, I want to move on to something that they do which is beneficial in my point of view, which is R&D tax claims.
Yes.
Now, they've been around a while now, and I guess there's a bit more awareness out there than there used to be, but there's still a lot of people, small businesses especially, when you talk about R&D tax claims, they go, "Oh no, well, you know, I don't do anything like that." But it is surprising what you can claim for, isn't it?
It really is. You know, there's a general perception, oh, it's men in like white coats in labs, isn't it?
Yeah,
they're the
exactly,
ones that get the R&D.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's not. And in very, very simple terms, it's if you're in business and you've got a difficulty or an issue that you're trying to overcome, and you need to use technology and innovation for that, there's a potential for you to claim R&D. Now, that could be either something new you're trying to introduce. So, as an example, Paul, who's on the show today he's allowed us to taste all his wonderful food and drink. He's gone through the process of trying to design and create something that he's going to be able to sell to market. That a lot of that will qualify for R&D tax credits,
right?
So that's certainly something you should look at. We've just been talking about electric cars. If you're looking at an innovative energy solution, so if you're a business provider who's in that sector, if you're doing something that is new, you're challenging the norm, it's very difficult to understand and introduce, again, there's potential for R&D. And the big thing here, just the last thing on this, was it doesn't have to be successful for you to claim for R&D. You just need to have satisfied those criteria and have incurred costs, because again, this R&D tax credit claim, it is based on the cost that you incur as a business.
Right. Okay. In terms of I happen to know from my own experience, because I've done two or I've had two or three R&D tax claims over the years. It is difficult to know what criteria HMRC use, and you know, so you tend to use a specialist accountant or whatever who has experience of doing these claims.
Yes,
which makes it much easier for you. If you try and do your own, it's a nightmare, because it's just heaps of paperwork, and you don't really know whether what you're doing is the correct format or not. But in terms of what you can claim back for an innovation. Just talk us through that. You can claim the cost of doing something. How about the cost of the people doing it? Is that claimable as part of the claim?
Yes. If there has been a cost incurred, so the cost of the people. So let's say you're a business owner and you're paying yourself a small salary. Well, unfortunately, you're only able to claim a portion of that salary. So if you might be paying yourself sort of £12,000 a year, which is the tax efficient level at the moment. If you've got an employee who's paid a bit more and they've spent all of their time developing these new products, well, you can claim for all of their cost.
Right.
It's not just their gross salary, it's the employer's national insurance on top of that salary, and it's the employer's pension contributions on top of that salary as well.
Okay.
So there's all these little bits and pieces people might miss. But basically, it's any cost that's been incurred. Very, very simple terms. Where does this benefit come from? Well, what happens is, if you say, let's say you've got a £10,000 cost that qualifies for R&D, you straight away inflate that by another 130%. So you add another £13,000 on, and you get tax relief on that additional £13,000.
Wow. Okay.
So that's roughly, potentially, up to another £2,570 that you could either reduce your tax bill by, or if you're not paying very much tax, you could get some tax back from HMRC.
Right. So they are still doing that.
Yes, they are.
In the early days, when I had a few years ago, when I did we did a big software innovation in Jobs in Kent, and we got a substantial R&D tax claim, and they just paid us in cash. I did hear that they started just taking it off your corporation tax bill over time, but you can still get cash payments back from them.
Yeah, they are moving the goalposts.
Yeah.
Paul, because now more and more people are claiming it, they are tightening up on the legislation. So there's been some changes in the last 12 months, and there will be more changes going forward as well.
Right. Okay. So the story here is don't think you don't have a claim, but talk to someone that's experienced to help you with your claim, I think, is the message.
That's absolutely right. And just to give people an indication, we've got Paul in the studio. Who's catering into catering? So, catering, hospitality, that can all qualify. IT software, which we just touched on as well, that can qualify. We've got construction businesses that make R&D tax credit claims. We've got manufacturers. We've got software developers. There's an awful lot of different businesses, and it's really comes down to that. Are you looking to overcome a technical challenge by using technology and innovation in a way that either improves what's already there or introduces something new? If you think your business can provide that or is trying to provide that, there's potential for R&D tax credit claim.
That's very interesting.
I want to kind of finish off on some really basic questions. And we quite often talk about these, but then I think, no, everyone's got this now. And then I come across loads of people that still haven't got it. And, you know, and I still get this thing all the time when I say to people, have you registered as a limited company? And they go, no, I'm not doing that. And you go, why? No, but you do realise you've exposed yourself personally in the nicest possible way as self-employed when you do the, you know, and they go, oh, I don't know. So, Mark, just talk us through again the difference, first and foremost, how you set up as self-employed, and then the difference between being self-employed and a small limited company.
Yeah, of course. So, very, very simple terms, if you decide to start working for yourself and if you're going to be earning more than £2,000 a year, you need to register as self-employed with HMRC. Now, you can either do that online or you can just ring them up and just tell them. They'll ask you what day you started. So you then become liable for the tax on that self-employed income from that date going forward.
Right.
So that's the simplest form. And I would say if you're running a sort of hobby business, you've got very limited downside to what you're doing. You're not likely to have a claim against you. You're not going to be dealing in huge amounts of money with suppliers, that if something goes wrong with one of your customers, you're going to become liable for that debt. Sole trader, self-employment could be the thing for you. If it becomes more of a material business, you have a team, you've got big customers, and you're dealing with sizable transactions, and there is a potential financial downside if the business goes wrong. You know, if one of your customers doesn't pay you and your suppliers still need paying, if there's a claim against you from one of your customers or suppliers, do you want to be financially liable for that personally, even though you individually have done nothing wrong? If you don't want that, you want the additional safeguard, that's when you should go limited.
Right.
Now, at this point, we're not talking about any of the tax benefits of being self-employed or limited, but it's really important for people to understand that distinction about the limited company. It is the clue's in the name. It's a limited liability. But even with that, you have to be careful if you're running a limited company and you're signing up for a finance deal or maybe a supplier credit facility. Check the small print, because it may say that if the company is unable to pay that debt, that you, the individual who signed this document, becomes personally liable.
So
you've got to be very, very careful about that.
I kind of know the answer to this, but I want to ask it out loud just so that a professional is telling people, because I get sick and tired of telling people. If you are a sole trader, self-employed, I don't think it's a legal requirement, but you really should have a separate bank account.
Yes, that's why I'm shocked that you don't have a business credit card.
No, but I've got a limited company.
But
so have I.
Huh?
So have I.
Yeah, well, I
couldn't exist without my company credit card. I would get in a terrible pickle.
It makes no difference to me.
Yeah, this is probably where Paul's on the button with getting his expense claims in. I think we've all worked with in places in the past where, you know, certainly when I was in finance department, some people wouldn't submit their expenses for a whole year.
Yeah.
How can you survive on that?
First of the month, mate, I'm up there like a rat up a drainpipe.
But coming back to your main point, Paul, yes, there's no legal requirement for a sole trader to have a separate business bank account, but it makes things an awful lot easier for you to manage it. Particularly, heaven forbid, that you might get an HMRC inquiry and you have to distinguish between personal and business expenditure.
Absolutely. Okay, interesting stuff. As always, thank you for that, Paul, and thank you for your guidance on all these things. We live in a very complicated world. I'm a massive fan of accountants, and I never started off that way when I started in business. You know, like a lot of people, I was very rude about boring old accountants, but I learned very early on the benefit of having some expertise in this field. And more than anything, in running a business, it's about, for me, it's about staying in touch with your numbers. And knowing what your business is doing at any given time. And a good accountant and a good management accounts are essential as far as I'm concerned for that.
It's very true, because unfortunately we're in a situation where you don't know your absolute 100% accurate tax bill until your accounts and your tax return are prepared. Yeah. Now, if you've got an accountant who might be a bit later doing things, that could be 9 months after the end of your accounting year.
Mm.
Now, if things have started going wrong in that year, and you've only picked it up 9 months after the end of that year, it means things are going to be going very wrong in the following year as well.
Yeah.
So this is why you touched on management accounts there, Paul. And in its simplest form, it's important for business owners to look at stuff on a monthly basis, know what their cash is, know what their potential tax liabilities are, and just understand three or four key numbers in your business, which is going to give you a good overview of exactly how things are going.
Absolutely. I mean, it's probably an issue that isn't going to affect us very much in the next few years, but corporation tax is trying to... I probably shouldn't say this on here, but basically, you're trying to minimise the position. If you know that you're gonna have an expenditure of something, and it would make more sense to spend that money prior to your end of tax year, so that you minimise the profits you make and therefore minimise tax. But as you say, if there's a gap in terms of that happening, you can't always time it right, so you don't always know what you're going to do. And I continually get surprised. We made how much profit? I didn't expect that. And then you get the old corporation tax bill that comes along behind it. You know, I didn't really expect that. But no, you're absolutely right. We need to keep on top of these things. There's going to be a lot of disruption in the small business marketplace over the next couple of years based on the cost of living.
All the money that the government gave away during
it's just
furlough. Rishi Sunak was just giving it away like sweeties, and we were all, we're not stupid, we're all saying, where on earth is this money going to come from? It was just sick, actually.
And it drives me potty, and I have to bite my tongue all the time on social media.
Do you?
I just, you know, I so want to go and slap people that say the most stupid things. I mean, the worst thing is tax. I mean, do you know, Mark, this will make you laugh, I spend a lot of my time arguing about tax on Twitter. Now, I'm not remotely a tax expert, but at least I understand some of the things about tax. You know, people come on and say the most ludicrous stuff about, you know, oh well, you know, he doesn't pay any tax, he gave himself a company loan. You think that's tax efficient, really? You know, people just don't know. And I was arguing with someone the other day who was adamant. He was saying energy companies should pay a windfall tax. And I went, they already do. No, they don't. Yes, they do. Exploration, there's a thing called ring-fenced exploration tax at 30%, whereas corporation tax is 19%. Anyway, I spend loads of time arguing about tax with people. People insist on the government sorting problems out. And all the government do is take your money and give you a little bit of it back. Yeah. In my opinion, I'm not trying to tell anybody else to agree with this, most of the problems with energy are caused by government taxes and green levies lumped on top of a very expensive product at the moment. And they come along and go, oh, well, we'll give you £400. Why not stop taking the money in the first place? That would be the best option. But, of course, they won't, because they never take something away once they've got it, do they? Anyway, I don't expect anybody to agree with me on that, but there you go.
Paul, I'll agree, and the job is perfect number 10 for you.
Yeah, you reckon? I don't think they'd like that somehow.
It's awful, isn't it, in a way, because we're not going to be political on the show, are we? Mm. But when you're just faced with two people who, neither of whom I think can run the country, it's a bit dicey.
Politics is broken because it's no longer fit for the 21st century. You know, you've only got to look at the two major political parties in this country. They don't even agree with themselves. We're watching a leadership fight at the moment where they keep rubbishing each other. In three months' time, they've got to be working together again, where they'll all come on telly and go, oh, the Prime Minister's lovely. And you go, hold on a minute, 3 months ago you said they were a cheating, scandalous scumbag. You know, make your mind up.
They had a beer gate. DG East have just tweeted in, and I think this is apt with our accountant on, our resident accountant, Mark. So, Mark Telford. So they say, hi, Vanilla Webb and Jules Serkin. How about a shout out for a business that has just received a bill from the FCA?
Oh, yeah.
Only 32% increase over last year.
The Financial Conduct Authority suddenly ran their prices up to people that need an FCA license. Mm-hmm. And there's no rationale for it. What whatsoever. It's just price gouging, as far as I'm concerned, because they don't even deliver anything. But anyway, Mark, I want a shout out for your website so that people can find out about all the lovely things that you do as accountants at Telford Accountants.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. It's www.telfordsaccountants.com.
Fantastic. There's a link for that on the Kempis Radio website. We've only got a minute left of the show.
Oh, we've got lots of eating to do after.
We have. Yeah. I haven't read a single email. You haven't read any emails.
I read two, actually.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I have.
Out,
we've out done a few 20, tweets.
Out of the 24 that you've got.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not sure we covered all the tweets either.
And Tenterden Chamber have said, "Hi, Paul and Jules, please can you give a shout out for a busy Chamber team preparing for our monthly committee meeting?"
Is that tonight?
So maybe they don't say. Okay. Possibly. So that's Tenterden Chamber. You can find them tenterdenchamber.org.
Cool. Well, we've kind of reached the end of another show.
Yes, we can eat your birthday cake now.
I can.
Has anyone got a match?
Yeah.
For your candles.
There's a joke that goes with that, but Wayne will hate me if I do that joke. I hope you managed to listen, Wayne. I hope you've forgiven me for abusing your friend Jules. but it is what I do.
He said he quite likes you now.
Yeah, no, it is what I do for a living. I want to say a huge thank you to our two fantastic guests, Mr. Paul Babra.
Thank you so much.
Of Carrara Foods and Chukka Chukka Beer.
Thank you so much.
The brilliant Mr. Mark Telford of Telford's Accountants.
Thank you.
And his team. Was it Lisa?
I was talking to Lisa yesterday morning.
She's got a lovely Northern Irish. She's lovely. We were talking about falling in love with just accents.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was very patient.
She's Northern Ireland.
Northern Ireland. Yeah, we can do it.
Yeah. Sorry, Lisa. No, I was having a lovely chat with Lisa. I ring her up just to listen to her. I've no idea what she's talking about. I'm not listening to that. I just like listening to her voice.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, I want to say a huge thank you to my...
She should do a radio show.
Yeah. I want to say a huge thank you to my co-host, the stunkingly gorgeous Jules Serkin. We'll be back with another Bunker Show next week. Have a fantastic week, everybody. See you all soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews. This is Channel 2.